Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Jennifer Stelter, a clinical psychologist, co-owner of NeuroEssence at the Dementia Connection Institute, creator of the Dementia Connection model, and Johns Hopkins author of The Busy Caregiver's Guide to Advanced Alzheimer's Disease. And we're going to be discussing non-pharmacological approaches to care, and specifically olfactory stimulation. Janice, the sense of smell is found to be 10,000 times stronger than the other senses. The stimulus of an odor is taken from the nasal receptor to the brain, where it stimulates the amygdala and the hippocampus. You know, I am such a fan of music and auditory stimulation, and just to think that olfactory stimulation is that much stronger. I actually had an incident not too long ago where I had broken a compass that had some oil in it. And as I went to clean up that oil, I smelled it. And it took me back decades to a scent that I hadn't smelled. And it was the scent of valve oil that I would put on my brass instruments when I was playing music in high school. A scent that I, again, hadn't smelled in decades, but I got that whiff and immediately was taken there. Something that I didn't even know was encoded in my brain. And you hear things like, you're trying to sell your house. If you're having an open house, bake some cookies. You know, scent is so powerful. And I'm so curious to learn more about how we can use it to support people living with dementia.
Oh my goodness, that is such a great story. And the sense of smell is so powerful, but 10,000 times stronger than other senses. You know, recently, our Banner Sun Health Research Institute director of the Sivan Laboratory for Neuropathology, Dr. Heidi Serrano, and one of our other team members actually showed me the olfactory bulb and track in one of the brains in our brain and body donation program at an educational activity. And the olfactory bulb itself was smaller than my pinky fingernail. And it was fascinating. And like they say, great things come in small packages. And this has the power to make such a huge difference. And one of the things that's amazing to me is that it makes such a big difference that there was a wonderful team of hospital clinicians that I worked with who were always looking for ways of doing things better. And they developed a non-pharmacological pain management cart, and it included aromatherapy to help with patient care. And I am so looking forward to this conversation about how olfactory stimulation can help caregivers and people living with dementia.
Welcome, Dr. Stelter. Thank you so much for joining our conversation today.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it.
Before we get started learning more about olfactory stimulation, I want to learn a little bit more about you. Can you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community?
Absolutely. You know, my journey is kind of quite different than other types of professionals that get into the industry. You know, most people say, well, I have a loved one who had it. And although I did, you know, I actually had a couple of family members that had Alzheimer's disease. It wasn't the main reason I had entered into the field, and actually I entered into it previous to them actually being diagnosed. I started in the mental health industry as a clinical psychologist. The first half of my career was dedicated to individuals challenged with mental health problems. And the reason I entered into that field was because I myself had my own mental health journey early on in high school and going into my young adult years. I found that through the use of coping mechanisms and educating myself around a lot of non-pharmacy tools really helped me in my journey. And so I really wanted to give back to know that these work, right? And that medication is an option, but it's not the only option. And I wanted people to understand that and be educated about it. And so when I started to work with individuals who were challenged with mental health problems as well, I was able to help them build their toolboxes around various non-pharmacy tools that worked for them. And although, you know, many of my patients were using medications, they were finding a lot of success in beyond the medication to know that they can be happy with various tools that they're using and not relying specifically on the medication to do that for them. And so when I graduated in my, with my postdoc at Northwestern here in Chicago, I entered into the senior living industry, opening up a behavioral health program for a major long-term care company here in the Midwest. And that is where I had my first exposure to individuals living with dementia. I had studied it in school, of course, but you know, did not have the direct hands-on experience at that time. And was able to have the opportunity to quickly grow within that company and take on a wide variety of clinical programs, not only behavioral health, but of course, our dementia programs. And so I absolutely fell in love with the people that I cared for, the staff who are helping them, the family members. It just was such a rewarding experience. And so I dedicated the second half of my career in working with individuals living with dementia. And so I networked and I educated myself further and had the opportunity in a 10-year period to create a model of care that people can really relate to, that they connect to, that they feel they can pick up and use, you know, the next day. And so it continued my journey of being able to educate people on tools that they can use, but this more now directed to people living with dementia and seeing just unbelievable results with it. And so, yeah, that's really my journey and how it came to be. And so when I did have a couple of family members who were diagnosed, I was able to help navigate the family and what are the best ways to provide good quality care. And they're very thankful for that. And I was thankful that I was able to have the knowledge and education to be able to provide that to them. So yeah, that is my caregiving journey in a nutshell.
Dr. Stelter, thank you for sharing that story. And I think Janice and I and Amber being a part of family and community services, we know it's the non-pharmacological approaches that really have the greatest impact and greatest benefit to quality of life for both the person living with the disease and their care partner. I'm so curious to learn about olfactory stimulation. Can you tell us why is this useful for people living with dementia?
Yeah, so it's a little multifaceted. You know, when we look at how the disease is progressing and what is actually happening to the individual, when they are progressing, they are starting to experience the world differently than you and I. How they experience the world is very similarly to how adolescents experience the world. So let's plug into that for a second. Adolescents experience the world in the first about 5 years of life using their senses to be able to learn and be able to observe and take in information and to be able to navigate and connect to people and create relationships, right, in some respect. So that is how adolescents are able to gain the skills to be independent. Now, we talk about people living with dementia, they're going to start to experience their world very similarly to that as well, where we're going to use sensory stimuli to maintain those independent skills for as long as possible, right? And so any form of positive stimuli that comes in to our brain is going to influence us in positive ways. And how does it do it? It influences our memories. It influences our emotions, ultimately influencing the way that we behave. And that's the model of care that kind of is described here is called the dementia connection model, which is what I developed. And this is imperative because we are able to allow people to caregivers, right, to provide this positive stimuli of any sort that will help to influence them in positive ways, right? So it's the first model that is a cognitive behavioral theory or therapy, if you will, that describes what's happening with the person living with dementia and gives us the tool to connect to them. So when we talk about, well, why does stimuli influence us? This is how the brain works, right? When we take in information through our senses, it is processed in the limbic system of the brain. And there's two very important organs in the limbic system. One is the amygdala, which is responsible for generating emotions amongst other types of abilities, and our hippocampus, which is responsible for generating emotion, or excuse me, memories. And so with that said, we are able to influence those emotions and those memories with that stimuli that comes in. And ultimately, with the way our mind works is once our emotions and memories are influenced, it impacts our behaviors, okay? So think about olfactory stimulation specifically. When molecules come in through the nasal cavity into the olfactory bulb sits at the base of the limbic system, so it directly influences that limbic system, providing the result that we may experience from that stimuli. So if it's a negative smell, it's going to unfortunately influence us to have negative emotions, memories, and behaviors. If it's a positive smell, positive emotions, memories, and behaviors, which is great. And so that's why olfactory stimuli is so important in dementia care, because it directly influences the limbic system. And it's a way that we know we can provide a experience that can influence the person with dementia to feel happy feelings, secure feelings, all those kinds of things, but also have those positive memories associated with it, which is you. You're the one providing the positive stimuli and then ultimately having positive response behaviors where they're more calm, they're maybe more sociable, right? Maybe they're able to maintain their appetite, you know, all those kinds of things. So it is a very powerful treatment that we can use in terms of providing those kinds of tools.
Thank you so much for that explanation. And we always love to hear about what's happening in the brain. And thank you for untangling that for us. And I'm wondering if you might also have a story that you would be willing to share with us about how olfactory stimulation helped to modify someone's state of mind or their behavior in a positive way.
Absolutely. I have tons of stories, but I'll start with one that always sticks out to me. I remember I was consulting with a long-term care company. I was on site and had just finished providing some education and training to their staff and was kind of wrapping up in a separate room. And they came to me and said, you know, Dr. Stelter, you know, such and such resident, you know, she just fell to the floor. She was becoming more physically aggressive, had been verbally aggressive with staff, and we just don't know what to do. And I said, okay, you know, let me go ahead and help you out. So I came in and I grabbed my bottle of lavender. And when I approached the scene, you know, there were some other things to kind of tweak there. There were staff kind of standing over her. So I asked people kind of to disperse to not overwhelm her. And I opened up the bottle of lavender to start to have the whiff of the scent kind of in the room, right? And I placed a couple on my palm area so that way she also can smell it too. I didn't apply directly to her just yet because, you know, this is a person who is probably very scared. She might be frustrated. You know, she had just acted out aggressively. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what to expect with that. So I wanted to make sure I didn't have a hands-on approach just yet with her. But as I'm talking to her calmly, and I know that she's able to take in the scent, just noticed a vast difference in her demeanor. You know, she started to look at me more attentively. She sat up. She was calm in her voice and like her tone, her body language seemed very calm. She was focused on me. And we were able to have a conversation about how she was feeling and what was going on. Now, she didn't have so many words, you know, because she was more progressing in the disease, but I could tell that she was becoming at ease with me so quickly. And that's the great thing, use of essential oils, is that they work within seconds, which is a tremendous difference from when you're using any kind of medications to alter behaviors. And so just that win-win there is that, you know, we were able to calm her down quite quickly. She was more attentive and she connected to me, right? And that's the key, is because she knew I was the one providing this experience that she felt more calm and safe with me. And so that's one of many stories that I have about the use of olfactory stimulation and how that can be used within the dementia connection model. But such a tremendous amount of success there when it comes to olfactory stimulation.
It seems like the goals of olfactory stimulation can be so vast. In that story, I mean, you talk about greater attention, relaxation, more focus. When I think of essential oils, what immediately comes to mind for me is use lavender to help you sleep at night. But you talk about many different goals of care that can be accomplished by using this. Could you share some of them?
Absolutely. So I've used essential oils to help increase appetite, because we do know, unfortunately, that nutrition loss and loss of appetite are common symptoms with the disease. I've used oils to help individuals with any types of sundowning types of behaviors to calm them through that. I've used it for aggression. I've used it for helping with just overall mood, to be more upbeat. If people are unfortunately suffering with any kind of depression or sadness, it helps with that. I've used it for, you know, help increase alertness and focus and attention, right, to get the person's day started. I've also used it, as you mentioned, for sleep, to help help the person calm. We've used it a lot in pain management too, because unfortunately, arthritis and neuropathy are common symptoms with the disease. So oils have been used in clinical trials to show effective in that manner. And, you know, just so many different ways that you can use essential oils. I created an approach through the Dementia Connection model called the Perfect Day,
where you can strategically use oils throughout the day that will produce very positive results. So, for example, in the morning, we recommend that you use peppermint and wild orange or a citrus scent, because peppermint is very invigorating. So it allows the person to kind of get up, start their day, feel focused and attentive. And it also helps with any kind of, if they have a headache or any head tension that they might have, any stuffy nose, you know, that kind of thing. And then the wild orange or any citrus scent helps to uplift that mood, right? So that's a great way to start the day. And then we recommend throughout the day to really diffuse any citrus scent. Bergamot is also a great oil that you can use to increase appetite. It's a form of a citrus scent. So diffusing that throughout the day helps to keep that mood uplifted while they're eating their meals, getting fully nourished, which is really important. And then allowing them to kind of socialize as well and kind of go about their day with their activities and engagement that they enjoy. And then we recommend that about 30 minutes prior to sundowning, that you start to diffuse that lavender essential oil to help really create a calming experience in the environment to help them get through those couple of hours. And then we recommend still diffusing lavender throughout the evening so they have a good restful night's sleep so they can wake up and feel invigorated in the morning. So this is the perfect day. It helps to, with so many kinds of symptoms that occur throughout the disease, that throughout the day, it allows them to experience more of a, you know, of course, a positive experience. And what I've also learned in my research is that, and I've done this, I did a kind of a small focus group within an assisted living, that when I use this specific perfect day over a 4-week period, we had residents who actually could decipher the scent and they knew what to do based on the scent of the oil. So I kid you not, when we diffused citrus scent, they knew oftentimes it was time to eat or come to the social area. So ones who would maybe need assistance with wheeling their wheelchair before or walking, they would just wheel themselves or they would walk with their walker safely to the social area to know what was going on. And so this promoted them to be more independent. And it took less stress off the caregivers because they could actually tend to the people who really do need assistance with mobility and helping them navigate to the social area. So we couldn't believe that kind of, side benefit, if you will, that came from using the essential oils in this clinical trial that we, this focus group, that we did. You can use so many oils for different things throughout this caregiving journey.
It's so powerful to hear how you were able to help caregivers in reducing stress. I have a question. I understand that the loss of the sense of smell can be an early indicator of dementia. Can this intervention still work? You're saying it can. How does that work?
Absolutely. So yes, it is an indicator. I always tell people, break out your jar of peanut butter, put it on your counter in your kitchen. If you can't smell it, contact your doctor. But it could be for a wide variety of reasons. But it is an indicator, an early indicator of possible cognitive loss. The thing with essential oils and why it's so effective compared to other types of positive olfactory stimuli. So we talk about, you mentioned earlier, of course, about, or Heather, you mentioned about, fresh baked cookies and things like that. Those are all great positive stimuli. So if the person can decipher those smell because maybe their smell has not been impacted, definitely use those as well. But if the smell is impacted, essential oils are still affected. And the reason are still effective. And the reason is because essential oils are, they have chemical constituents in them that are so small that they can actually move through the blood-brain barrier and go in places that other stimuli can't get to, okay? Meaning more so like, if you are using other kinds of olfactory stimuli. So even though the person may not be able to tell you if you're using lavender versus rosemary versus peppermint, they may not be able to tell that. It's still going to impact the brain in the way that I described earlier, where those small molecules, are coming into the nasal passage, impacting the limbic system. So it still works on a cellular level, which is great, even though they may not be able to decipher which smell it is. Now, going back to my example of the perfect day can still be used to help them navigate throughout the day. They just may not have that 4-week effect that I talked about where they can tell which scent equals what they should be doing. They may not be able to have that experience, but they can still have that immediate experience that essential oils provide.
You talk about essential oils affecting people on a cellular level and how it's able to penetrate the blood-brain barrier. I'm curious though, are these scents going to affect people differently? And I wonder too, on a cultural level, does lavender always equal calm? Does rosemary always equal alert?
So it definitely is a preference-based, right, type of approach. And what I mean by that is kind of two things. One is that if they can still smell, you want to utilize scents that they enjoy. So maybe they aren't a big fan of the flowers. So maybe lavender for calming is not really something that they want to use, but maybe they're more like of a woodsy kind of person. They like to use, maybe we can use cedarwood for calming instead, right? So it definitely is preference-based in terms of what smell that they like. From a cultural standpoint, there might be specific smells within spices and things like that, that they enjoy smelling. And so I'd recommend using those that are targeted for the specific symptoms that you want. And that's where kind of working with someone who really understands oils can help guide you in that process, okay? The other side of this though, is looking at, these chemical constituents can influence our neurotransmitters in our brain. So how they influence our neurotransmitters can determine which kinds of oils you may want to use. Okay. So it's kind of a trial and error in that respect, is that you use the lavender and you see if it's effective, right? I mean, obviously you can't measure their neurotransmitters in their brain, but what you can do is you can observe their face, facial expressions. You can observe their behaviors to see, do they appear that they feel safe? Do they appear that they feel calm, right? So we have to be investigators to really research and look at how these oils are impacting them. And we recommend keeping a journal, right? Keeping a journal of what works, what doesn't work, what time of day did you use it? You know, that kind of thing. Really imperative to keep a journal to know what would be effective for them. If you are able to check out my book, I actually, after each chapter, have a log that you can use for the specific tools that I use per symptom to say which tools worked for the symptom that you used, which did not work, and included that are which essential oils to use for which symptoms.
So in a nutshell, how do you recommend that caregivers get started today?
I would definitely say your go-to essential oil to use is lavender. Lavender has so many health benefits, and it really is the longest oil that's been, kind of available. It's been around for centuries, and it's the most tested in clinical trials. So we know that it's safe. Okay. And I'm going to use the word safe, and you can't see my quotation marks, but I'm using quotation marks with my hands because, you know, some people will say, well, I use essential oils, so it must be safe. And that's not always true. We want to be safe with how we use oils. Okay. So aromatic use is going to be your best bet for anything cognitive, right? Anything mood, anything brain related. You want to be able to smell it in. That's what I mean, aromatic, right? So if you use a diffuser, which you can purchase really anywhere, you just want to make sure you follow the directions on the box. You want to make sure that you're using distilled or filtered water, like bottled water. Do not use tap water, okay? Even though maybe the instructions say that, because some I've read that they do. Tap water, you know, unless you have a very great, filtered system within your house, we know that our water has some stuff in it that we really shouldn't be drinking. So if you don't have a nice filtered system, I would recommend getting one and using that filtered water, because you don't want any of the chemicals within your water to hitch a ride to your brain. Because remember, essential oils are so small. So they're going to break up all those particles and it's going to go into your brain, and you don't want what's in your water to, you know, to influence your brain in that way. So use distilled or bottled water within your diffuser. You recommend, depending on how the square footage of your diffuser, you probably use anywhere from 3 to 5 drops. Think less is more. And that's why a bottle of an essential oil can last you really a month, if not longer, which is great. And then you turn it on and there you go. And you'll start to feel the effects within a few seconds. And within 30 minutes, your whole body will be surfaced with what it needs. Okay. You can use it topically. You will always want to mix with a carrier oil. That could be almond oil, jojoba oil, coconut oil, anything to that nature. For our vintage population, our seniors, we call them vintage here at the Dementia Connection Institute, you want to use a higher dilution ratio. So 1 to 10, meaning 1 drop of essential oil to 10 drops of a carrier oil. Mix it together and then you apply it. Now you can do this around your neck area, like your pulse points, behind the neck, behind the ears, your wrists, right? And that will also get you the aromatic experience. So you can have both topical and aromatic. But if you're experiencing pain or things like that, you can actually apply the oils directly to the pain area. So that's kind of how you use them. But I would say to get started, lavender would be your best bet because it can help with all kinds of symptoms with the disease. So pick up a diffuser, your lavender, and you're ready to get started.
Dr. Stelter, I really appreciate this easy how-to for our caregivers to get started. And I think all of the benefits of using this for the person living with dementia, I also encourage our listeners to consider how they could use olfactory stimulation as a form of self-care for themselves. Before we close our conversation, Dr. Stelter, I would love for you to give us your final thought when it comes to olfactory stimulation for people living with dementia.
I would definitely say, you know, it is one of our senses that directly influences the limbic system. The other ones indirectly influence. They still have an influence, but it just is indirect. It is one of the most powerful tools that I think is underutilized and should be utilized more. I would highly recommend checking out the use of aromatherapy and using essential oils, because it's no longer about your using it for your visits to the spa or getting a massage, right? It can be used beyond those, because essential oils can impact all of our systems in our body in a positive way. And, you know, as more and more we learn about the disease process, we've understood that there's an oil for every single symptom that goes along with this journey. So you can have a full tool of just essential oils to use if you wanted to. So it's a really great way to connect to the person, because you're the one providing those positive oils, right? And so hence the term dementia connection model. You will find that connection to be far more bountiful than it was before. And I just want to encourage people to visit us at our website, dementiaconnectioninstitute.org. Where you can check out our services. You can get on our email listserv to find out and keep, you know, posted on all the great things that we're doing. You know, we hope that you'll take advantage of our services, because we really do want to work with you through the caregiving process and through this journey from start to finish. Because we not only can service you as the caregiver, but any professionals that are within the, you know, the journey that the person is, you know, a part of, but also the person living with dementia too. So we hope that you'll check us out.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Jennifer Stelter, a clinical psychologist, co-owner of NeuroEssence at the Dementia Connection Institute, creator of the Dementia Connection Model, and Johns Hopkins author of The Busy Caregiver's Guide to Advanced Alzheimer's Disease. We're so grateful for this fascinating conversation and you helping us untangle olfactory stimulation for people living with dementia.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on today.
I appreciate all that you've shared about building a successful toolbox and helping people find success beyond the medication. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And of course, thank you to our amazing listeners. Thank you for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.